So just imagine waking up tomorrow, turning on your computer, and realizing that 25 years of your life is just gone.
Like completely wiped out.
Yeah, completely and legally erased. We're talking irreplaceable family photos, thousands of dollars in digital purchases, decades of documents, and you didn't even do anything wrong. You didn't violate the terms of service.
You just got hacked.
Exactly. You simply got hacked. And the company's grand solution was just to bulldoze your entire digital life just to, be safe.
I mean, it sounds like some sort of dystopian thought experiment, but it's actually the exact reality for millions of users trying to navigate the modern internet right now.
Yeah, it's wild. Welcome to today's deep dive. It is Thursday, July 16th, 2026, and we are looking at a stack of freshly leaked reports and internal documents from Dark Tech News today.
And rather than just reading you the headlines, our mission today is to connect the dots across six seemingly unrelated stories.
Right, because when you actually map them all out, they reveal this massive hidden power shift regarding who actually holds the keys to your digital vault.
Which is something you definitely need to know for your next meeting or, just understand how the internet is changing under our feet.
For sure. Oh, and before we jump in, a quick note to you, the listener. Some of these sources touch on highly debated issues today, things like fossil fuel efficiency, AI ethics, cryptocurrency.
Yeah, we are taking absolutely no sides today.
None at all. Our goal is strictly impartially reporting the facts and the viewpoints contained in the original source material. We're not endorsing any ideological stance. We just want you to understand how the machinery actually works.
Well, the machinery is currently operating under a fundamental illusion, which brings us to the first report about Joshua Cain. He's a German user who just lived through that exact nightmare scenario you described in the intro.
Okay, let's unpack this. So Joshua had a 25-year-old Microsoft account, and he woke up to find he'd been hacked, which, standard issue, happens every day.
Great, it happens all the time.
So he followed all the rules. He contacted Microsoft. He verified his identity using his actual physical passport, his birth certificate, and his internet bill. He proved beyond any doubt that he was the owner.
But Microsoft's response wasn't to hand the account back. Citing this mandatory internal security policy,
Yeah.
they just permanently deleted it.
Permanently. And the data points on what he lost are just devastating. We're talking about a digital game library worth thousands of euros, 25 years of gaming history.
Ouch.
But the absolute gut punch is the OneDrive account tied to it. It contained over 10 years of his children's baby photos, gone forever. Microsoft essentially told him the decision was final and just shut the door.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is when you look closely at the fine print, you realize the core legal difference between physical ownership and digital ownership.
Which most people don't think about.
Exactly. I mean, if you buy a physical game disc or you print out a photo and put it in a shoebox, you own it. It works offline. You can sell a disc.
Yeah.
You can hand the shoebox to your kids. But digital ownership is entirely an illusion. You are merely purchasing a revocable license. You own nothing. You're just renting space on a server, and the landlord can evict you without notice.
It's literally like buying a house, filling it with 25 years of irreplaceable family heirlooms. Someone breaks in, and your security company's solution is to legally bulldoze the entire house with your stuff inside just to prevent further unauthorized access.
That is a perfect analogy. And the broader implication here is the complete lack of due process,
Yeah, there's nobody to talk to.
Right. Users currently have no appeal system. You can't escalate a permanent deletion to a human judge or even a higher tier manager. The algorithm makes a choice and your digital life is gone.
But there might be some pushback coming, right?
Yeah. Legal analysts in the source material predict this specific case might be a breaking point. We might see a massive class action lawsuit in the European Union, which obviously has significantly stronger consumer rights laws designed to prevent companies from arbitrarily destroying purchased content.
I want to pause on that power dynamic, though, because if everyday users are severely punished and lose decades of their own data just for being the victim of a hack, how do these same tech giants behave when they want data that they don't own?
Well, they simply take it. I mean, the source material on the recent Suno hack answers that quite definitively.
Yeah, let's look at Suno. It's one of the most popular AI music generation tools in the world right now. And a massive leak just exposed the sheer scale of how they train their AI.
It's massive.
We are looking at 2.1 million musical works stolen.
And the breakdown of the scraped data is just staggering. The leak confirms they ingested over 113,000 hours of music directly from YouTube Music.
Wow.
They pulled over 500,000 songs from Deezer, grabbed 800,000 lyrics from Genius, and downloaded 600,000 MIDI files.
But Suno released a statement claiming they only trained their models on, quote, legal sources. But the leaked source code tells a completely different story.
A very different story.
Yeah. The report highlights three incredibly aggressive harvesting methods. They had bots doing 24/7 web scraping, hiding behind 12,000 different IP addresses just to avoid detection. They were directly downloading from illegal torrenting piracy networks.
Which is obviously not a legal source.
No, not at all. And then there's something the report calls API abuse. Now, I always thought an API was just the legitimate doorway that apps use to talk to each other. How does a legitimate doorway translate to a massive data heist?
So think of an API like a VIP side door to a nightclub. A platform like YouTube gives developers these VIP passes so their software can grab necessary data quickly and efficiently,
right,
you know, without waiting in line with regular web traffic.
Okay, makes sense.
Well, Suno has essentially counterfeited 10,000 of these VIP passes, handed them to automated bots, and instructed them to empty the club's inventory before the security cameras even noticed what was happening.
That is insane. So they set up 10,000 fake YouTube accounts, and each account was downloading 500 songs a day.
Yep.
That is 5 million songs a day being funneled into their AI. That isn't a legal source. That's a coordinated industrial heist.
Which, you know, this raises an important question about the existential threat to human art, because this goes far beyond basic copyright violation.
Right. It's deeper than that.
It's about the fundamental devaluation of human creativity. The report details the panic among studio musicians and producers facing massive job loss. I mean, if an AI can generate a polished professional track in 30 seconds using stolen data, the financial value of songwriting plummets to near zero.
And it steals their specific sound, too.
Exactly. This AI can perfectly replicate a specific human artist's exact vocal style without paying them a single dime in royalties.
It's basically identity theft for artistic style.
Yeah.
So unsurprisingly, the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, is calling this the largest digital theft in music history. Universal, Sony, and Warner are gearing up for potential billion-dollar lawsuits that could completely bankrupt these AI startups.
Though honestly, assuming the AI companies even survive the legal battles, they're about to hit an entirely different kind of wall, a physical one.
Let's talk about the physical reality of all this data harvesting. Because Suno is stealing all this data to train massive AI models, but building AI at this scale is creating a terrifying physical crisis in the real world.
It requires a terrifying amount of computing power.
Yeah. Which brings us to Barak Yegor, Meta's VP of Infrastructure Engineering. He just dropped a bombshell at the VB Transform 2026 conference. He basically stood on stage and stated that Meta has only 20 months to completely rebuild its entire infrastructure.
And in the tech world, a 20-month runway for a total infrastructure overhaul is practically tomorrow. It is panic mode.
20 months is nothing.
Right. And the data he presented explains why. AI agent requests at Meta have grown 30 times over in just the last 6 months. Wait, clarify AI agent for the listener really quick, because that's different from just typing a prompt into ChatGPT. Correct. When you type a prompt, you wait for a single answer. An AI agent is autonomous software that you give a broader goal to, like, book me a flight, update my calendar, and draft an email to my boss.
Ah, okay.
And the agent just goes off and executes dozens of background tasks entirely on its own to achieve that goal.
Which explains the nighttime traffic spike. Because according to the report, nighttime requests on Meta servers used to be a quiet period. But now they've spiked from 5% to 45% of total traffic.
Yeah, the bots don't sleep.
Exactly. Here's where it gets really interesting. We used to build tech for humans who sleep and wait. Now we're building for AI agents. It's like designing a highway system for daily commuters, and suddenly millions of insomniac autonomous trucks want to use it 24/7 at lightning speed. The roads are literally buckling.
That highway analogy perfectly captures the three broken assumptions Yegor outlined in the source. First is the capacity assumption.
Yeah.
Like you said, we assume systems can cool down at night. They can't anymore. Second is the identity assumption. Current identity and access management systems, or IAMs, they were built for one human logging in.
Okay.
When one human suddenly deploys 100 separate autonomous AI assistants that all need security clearance simultaneously, the authentication servers just crash.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And the third broken assumption is latency. The report notes that humans can tolerate like a 2 to 3 second delay for a web page to load, but AI agents are sending 100 parallel requests a second. If they're delayed by even 500 milliseconds, half a second, the entire workflow breaks down. Why is that so fragile?
Because AI agents chain their tasks together. If step A takes half a second too long, step B assumes a failure and times out, which cascades and cancels steps C through Z. The precision required is immense.
And it's expensive.
Astronomically expensive. By 2028, Meta projects their infrastructure costs will balloon 10 times over, from $5 billion to $50 billion annually.
Wait, if Meta, which is one of the most resource-rich companies in human history, is panicking about a $50 billion server bill, what happens to the rest of the industry? What happens to the startups?
Analysts in the report are predicting a bloodbath for smaller startups. They forecast massive service outages across the board by Q4 of 2026.
Wow.
And by Q1 of 2027, surviving companies will be forced to hike the prices of their AI services by 3 to 5 times. We are looking at a brutal market consolidation where only a few hypergiants are left standing, simply because they're the only ones who can afford the electricity.
So if AI is this resource-heavy and expensive, what industries are actually paying for it? Casual users writing emails aren't footing a $50 billion bill. Heavy industries are, like oil.
Yeah, the oil sector has the cash. Applaud Computing, a London-based startup, just raised a $20 million Series A round. They're building a foundation model called Orbital.
Which is like, what, a specialized AI?
Exactly. Think of it as a specialized GPT-4, but engineered exclusively for the oil, gas, and petrochemical industry.
The real-world numbers on Orbital in this report are wild. It analyzes data from 10,000 different refinery sensors in real time. In one case study of a refinery processing 100,000 barrels a day, Orbital jumped the overall efficiency from 78% to 85%.
That's a huge jump at that scale.
It is. It dropped unexpected downtime from 15 days a year to just 3 days. Energy costs fell by $8 million. The total savings was $35 million annually. If Orbital costs a refinery $2 million a year to license, that is a 17.5x return on investment. The AI literally pays for itself in under a month.
The financial incentive is undeniable, but as the source material points out, it creates a really fascinating ethical dilemma regarding our climate goals.
Right. So what does this all mean? We have a massive ethical dilemma here because looking at it impartially based on the text, on one hand, we're reducing waste and energy usage, and we're detecting safety hazards before a pipe bursts. Those are undeniable environmental and safety wins.
But the counterargument laid out in the report is equally significant. By making fossil fuel extraction and refinement so hyper-efficient and incredibly profitable, we might be completely disincentivizing the transition to clean energy.
Because why change what's working so well?
Right. Why invest billions in unproven green tech when AI just made your oil refinery 17 times more profitable?
Not to mention the labor impacts. The report notes this level of automation will lead to massive job reductions for human engineers.
Yeah.
And there's the capital concentration problem, too. If only the massive oil giants like Exxon or Shell can afford to license this $2 million AI, they'll completely price out smaller competitors.
There are definitely no easy answers here, but it highlights a recurring theme. AI is the ultimate optimization engine.
Which makes you wonder, we can see everything AI is doing to optimize refineries down to the last sensor, but what are tech companies optimizing when they point those sensors at us? Let's look at Meta's NameTag project.
Yeah, NameTag is an internal facial recognition system at Meta designed to identify people in completely untagged images and videos across all their platforms. The technology itself is alarming, but how Meta has communicated about it throughout 2026 is a masterclass in obfuscation.
The timeline in the report is just damning. In January, Wired publishes a piece reporting NameTag is in internal testing. Meta officially denies it.
Completely denies it.
Then in March, a former employee posts on LinkedIn about their work on the project. Meta pivots and says, oh, the project was canceled years ago. In May, internal documents leak, proving NameTag is still highly active. Meta pivots again, claiming it's purely an academic research project, not a consumer product.
Amen.
Finally, in July, irrefutable evidence surfaces, and Meta's response is just complete radio silence.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the motive for lying is obvious. They are terrified of public reaction and European privacy regulators. Mm-hmm. Since 2018, Meta has been hit with billions in fines over data misuse. Legally, if they admit NameTag exists as an active product, they invite immediate punishing regulatory scrutiny.
Wait, if Meta can't even be honest about a massive facial recognition surveillance tool they're actively building, Why should we trust their 20-month infrastructure warning from earlier?
That is the exact point the Electronic Frontier Foundation makes in the source material.
Right. This transparency crisis means we are entirely at their mercy for information. We just have to trust their PR departments and whatever happens to leak.
And when trust in centralized tech companies, and by extension, centralized fiat systems begins to erode, people naturally look for decentralized alternatives. Which brings us to the crypto markets.
Yeah, our final report looks at Bitcoin, which is currently pushing near $65,000 following some softer-than-expected U.S. June CPI data. The Consumer Price Index came in at 2.9% versus the projected 3.1%. For the listener who isn't staring at financial charts all day, what does that CPI drop actually mean in practice?
Simply put, the CPI measures inflation. When inflation cools down, it signals to the market that the Federal Reserve might cut interest rates, making it cheaper to borrow money. When money is cheap, investors are more willing to take risks, which historically sends cash flowing into high-risk, high-reward assets like Bitcoin.
But despite the good news, the source material highlights a massive divergence playing out on the blockchain right now. If you look at who is actually buying and selling, there's a real tension.
Yeah, the on-chain data shows two very distinct behaviors. The Whale's wallets holding over 1,000 Bitcoin, they sold 12,300 Bitcoin last week.
Wow.
Yeah, they cashed out roughly $800 million to take profits. At the same time, the miners sold 8,500 Bitcoin, or about $550 million.
Let me clarify the miner situation for anyone not deep in the weeds. The report mentions they're selling to cover operational costs following the recent halving. The halving literally cut the reward these miners get for processing transactions in half. So their massive electricity bills to run the server stayed exactly the same, but their primary source of income dropped by 50% overnight. They're forced to sell off their Bitcoin reserves just to keep the lights on.
Precisely. So you have massive selling pressure from the whales taking profit and the miners paying bills. But on the other side, retail investors, everyday people holding less than one Bitcoin, went on an absolute buying spree, accumulating 15,000 Bitcoin in the same period.
Crypto analyst Willy Wu provides some brilliant insight into this dynamic in the report. He points out that institutional smart money almost always takes profit early. They sell the local tops. Meanwhile, retail investors are often driven by FOMO, and they end up buying those exact same tops.
Classic market behavior.
Yeah. But Wu stresses this doesn't mean a massive crash is imminent. Instead, it signals a healthy market correction. The market is basically shaking out the weak hands before the next long-term upward trend can begin.
Which is why the source material explicitly advises against trying to day trade this volatility. Crypto is complex and unpredictable. If you are participating in this space, the recommended strategy is dollar cost averaging, or DCA.
Just buying a set amount on a schedule.
Exactly. Buying a small set amount on a regular schedule protects you from the wild emotional swings of the market.
And more importantly, the report stresses moving your assets off centralized exchanges and into personal hardware wallets. And that piece of advice ties a neat bow on everything we've talked about today. Do not trust centralized entities with your digital ownership, whether it is your children's baby photos on a Microsoft server or your financial assets on a crypto exchange.
Yeah, when you synthesize all six of these reports, you see three overwhelming themes defining our digital reality right now. First is the control problem. From Microsoft legally erasing memories without appeal to Meta building hidden facial recognition, the power balance is entirely skewed away from you, the user.
Second is the AI ethics vacuum. We have companies like Suno stealing 5 million songs a day, and models like Orbital hyper-optimizing fossil fuels. The industry is obsessed with asking, can we build this? And has entirely stopped asking, should we?
And the third theme is the transparency crisis. The technology has simply evolved at a velocity that has shattered our ability to govern it, legislate it, or even fully comprehend it.
But the text is clear. You are not completely powerless here. There are concrete protection strategies you can deploy right now. First, keep local, physical backups of your critical data. A hard drive on your desk cannot be deleted by a cloud security algorithm.
Right. Get a physical drive.
Second, use hardware wallets for your digital finances. Third, operate under the assumption that you are always being tracked online and actively minimize your data footprint. And finally, support robust privacy legislation, like the EU's Digital Services Act. You have to vote with your wallet and your attention.
It requires active participation. The days of passively trusting the digital vault are over.
Yeah, they really are. I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, building on everything we've just unpacked. We're seeing an incredible surge in public anger over this loss of digital control. Naturally, that anger pushes people toward decentralized, user-owned systems where no single CEO can delete your account or steal your data.
Which makes sense.
But think about this. If the AI infrastructure required to run the future of the internet is going to cost $50 billion a year, as Meta warns, is true decentralization even physically possible anymore? Or are we inevitably moving toward a future where an even smaller oligopoly of tech giants holds all the cards simply because they are the only three companies on Earth who can afford to plug in the servers? Are we just locking ourselves into a new, infinitely more expensive digital vault where they still hold the only key?
That's a heavy question to sit with.
It is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the digital world around you.